Welcome to Embers of the Bonfire. This is your host, Hada Benachar. And today's guest is my sister-in-law, founder of Dira, and someone whose relationship with God I truly admire. Livna Al-Kharousi, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Harab, for having me. I'm really grateful to be here.
Thank you for being here. Today's topic is unwavering faith. What does that mean to you?
It means it's the easier path. Yeah, I think that the gift that we're given is the capacity to be able to have faith, the capacity to be able to, in a way, delegate our worries to something greater than us. And for me, I find it easier to have unwavering faith than to not.
So I'd like to break that down in terms of the fundamentals of faith. What does faith mean exactly?
I suppose the first thing is the belief that there is a consciousness greater than us. So I, in a way, look at myself as the little me in the ego or the personality, and that there's a much more expansive consciousness that is the orchestrator of this universe, that is the creator of this universe, that is the energy, the love, the source of everything. And some people call it God, and some people call it Allah, and some people call it Elohim, or whatever word you want to use in your language. But that source energy is the thing that makes us and guides us and arranges everything for us. So it's almost like we're here just to witness that. So that's the starting point, is that the belief in God or the existence of this energy that is greater than us in our little mind and our little ego.
I feel like the way you talk about it, there's a sense of peace and knowing. I would like to go back a bit and talk about your journey of how and when did you get to know your faith and get to dive deeper into that knowing, that there's a higher consciousness, that there is a God, that there is all of this power that exists beyond us.
I suppose it happened when I was quite young. So I'm almost 50. So I've had many decades of this relationship. When I was young, I grew up in, I would say, of course, I was in a Muslim society because I was living in Oman. My father is Omani and Muslim. My mother was a Roman Catholic. She converted to Islam when she got married to my dad. But both of my parents never sort of indoctrinated us on a specific way of existing or being. It was just understood that, okay, if you're in a society that you adhere to what is respectable and what is appropriate for wherever you are. And we lived in many different countries when I was young, so it was open. It wasn't closed in the perspective I was raised with. So my father was also a physicist, so he understood energy in a way that most people can't necessarily intellectualize, but he understood it from a scientific perspective. And even though God is not of the physical dimension, and physics is around, or the study of the physical laws in a way, he still had the knowing that there is a consciousness, whether or not it's restricted to a religion, but that there is a consciousness that makes everything happen. It doesn't just happen by mistake. When I was a child, I always had this sort of feeling that there was something much more expansive than just my little body, if that makes sense. And when I was young, I also felt like, I suppose many children, you feel you kind of have superpowers. So I used to feel that, like many children, that I could see things other people couldn't see, and I could fly, and I could do all kinds of things that you assume as a child is normal. And then one day someone tells you you're imagining things and it's not so. In a way, I kind of felt like this mystical world was more my reality than the reality that of the day-to-day going and playing and being at school or collecting bugs or whatever it was. I was very much in my own bubble of a reality that I had created for, I suppose, my own entertainment. And so I was always trying to push the boundaries of what could be possible in that reality. And in those days, there wasn't really video games. So it's not like you could go to Minecraft and create a reality. It was in your mind, right? When I would explore that world in my imagination, you could call it imagination, but I started to nurture this relationship with what I didn't necessarily have a word for, but what was a power or a source that was just beyond me. I suppose you could say that, yes, I did go to school and I was taught about religion, but I never really paid attention. Because I suppose some of the things that were taught were not really in resonance with what my experience was. And so I didn't hold the authority in the teacher, if that makes sense. I held the authority in the experience. And
that's powerful, first of all.
I think I was lucky. Everything happens in its perfect orchestration. So I feel that that was also the grace of God to allow for that possibility for me. As I started to get older and then I started to understand religion a little bit more. So when I was, you could say, a teenager, I was living in Canada and I didn't have, you could say, like a religious education like a typical high school student in Oman. Okay, so I knew that you needed to pray, but I didn't know all the details around it or the requirements, you could say, as per hadith. Yeah, so I knew that the basics, like it's five times a day and... But I didn't necessarily know, like, it has to be in a certain way or it has to be with a certain preparation or that you face a certain direction. Like, all of these things I felt were not, in my teenage mind, not important. Okay, so if I was in the park, I would just pray. If I was in my car, I would just pray. Like, it wasn't that I had the limitation of being taught in school of how to do it, if that makes sense.
All of these specifics, right? Okay, they have a time and place and obviously they have their use, but the primary of connecting and focusing on that connection without necessarily any limitations of what or how it should be is so important to be able to just focus on connection, whatever that is in that for you in that moment. That's the primary, I feel.
I think it happened in a perfect way for me. My journey isn't random. Like everybody's journey is not random. The reason for my journey, why it was left open, was because it was God's orchestration in that way, to have this exploration of a relationship that perhaps wouldn't have been possible for me if I had rules, if that makes sense. So there was always this desire, this yearning, this knowing that of God's existence and this like wanting and yearning for that relationship to be nurtured. It's just I didn't have the framework that was so specific of how. And it's not that, so my grandmother had written down for me, what do you say when you pray? But it was in Arabic. And, you know, so I didn't really understand everything. So I used to add my own things that I wanted to say to God, if that makes sense.
Yeah, there was no limitations.
Yeah, there were no limitations to it. And then when I was 20, I moved to Oman and I started to work. And of course, when I moved to Oman, it was at a different time. It was pre-9/11. So as a society, it was a Muslim society, but it wasn't in the determined, you could say, like the determined way of the statement of we are a Muslim society, if that makes sense. Mm. So I found that when I first moved here, it was much more liberal in the sense of there was a lot more diversity of thought, you could say. And when 9/11 happened, which I was also working here, there was a shift in two ways. There was a shift in the society from the perspective of that the Muslim ummah felt attacked worldwide, and there was a need for a coming together in the statement of identity. Of what does it look like to be a Muslim? What does it mean to be a Muslim? And there was a lot of media that came up as a result of that. So, for example, I recall at the time there was a TV network called Huda TV that Saudi Arabia had started. That was the first sort of English source, English language source on TV for people to learn about Islam. But it was a perspective of Islam that is quite conservative. And so there was a management of the narrative of what does it mean to be a Muslim? What does it look like to be a Muslim? As an example, the company that I was working for at the time, most people, when I joined, it wasn't that it was a big deal, you know, do you wear a scarf? Do you not wear a scarf? But by the time I left the company, there were only four of us out of thousands that were not wearing hijab. So there was a drastic shift in the span of about 7 years. 7 to 10 years of the societal interpretation of what religion is and how it forms your identity. And also, I suppose my family members, as I got to know them, they became older, they became more religious. You know, I think as you get older, you start to move away from the usual, it's like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? You move away from the basic physical needs, friendship needs, esteem needs, and then you move into this yearning to self-actualize in some way. And so religion becomes more important as you get older. But yeah, so when I had first moved to Oman, it was still pretty, you could say there wasn't such a strong identity of what it looks like to be, in particular in Muscat. I come from the Zanzibari community, which is much more liberal than perhaps the south of Oman, as an example, at that time. I moved back, I started working, and then I had my first Ramadan here, which was beautiful. There was just like this calling of, you have to go for Hajj. So I was about, I don't know, 21 or something. And at the time, nobody took me seriously because I was too young in those days. Now it's different. But in those days, it was Hajj was something you did when you're at the end of your life to wipe off all your sins sort of thing. So
clean slate.
Clean slate, like just before you, yeah, before you exit. So yeah. I wasn't taken seriously and nobody was really interested, yeah, to go with me. But because I hadn't been in the Middle East really as an adult, I thought the calling was so strong, the yearning was strong. And I thought, I don't know how long I'll be in this region. So I need to make this happen. So I went for Hajj. I hadn't, in those, like I said, in those days, there wasn't a lot of English TV around Islam. So I didn't really, I didn't watch Arabic TV because I didn't speak Arabic at the time. But yeah, so I didn't even know, I had not seen a photograph of Mecca. I had bought a book that had a drawing of the Kaaba on the cover. And so I assumed that it would look like some kind of old, I don't know. I don't know what I was expecting, but it definitely wasn't what I saw when I went. So I went and it was just overwhelmingly amazing. Like I just, all I said was wow for about the 2 weeks I was there. The only word that could come out of my mouth was wow. When I was in Mecca at that time, I suppose because also my intention was so pure, it was literally, I just wanted to go to God's house sort of thing. I don't know what I thought about it, but it was just like I had to go. And yeah, it was just miraculous, a miraculous experience in the you could say like the physicalized manifestation of knowing of God's existence. So it was like, for me at the time, yeah, I would think I'm thirsty, someone brings water. I'd think, oh, I'm feeling hot, the wind would blow. Like it was just a continuously live dialogue of whatever I had in my mind would be responded to instantly. And so I knew that you can't deny this. It was so undeniable.
And the evidence of God.
Yeah, the evidence of God's listening, right? So I didn't even need to speak. I just needed to think, and it was immediately responded to. Also, you could say like the cleanse I experienced from the shifting of my own perspective about things was also so tangible that and so obvious that I just couldn't deny it. It was such an undeniable experience. And I think Hajj is that. The whole purpose of it is it becomes undeniable for different people in their own way, in their own language. But I think that it creates this undeniable knowing of God's existence. And not only God's existence out there, but God's existence in the response to your every thought and your feeling and your questions. So after I went for Hajj and I had this, I would call it like an undeniable knowing, even though when I was younger, I knew, but I didn't have the evidence. It was almost like this fictitious fantasy in my mind of possibility, whereas now I had the proof.
Now it's real.
Now it's real. Yeah. So then my perspective was widened in what is this possibility? So if this is real, then how do you implement, incorporate, and embody this knowing in your life? And so I started this journey. And what was interesting is, so after I went for Hajj, there was 9/11 and the shift of the narrative of what does it mean to be in the Muslim Ummah and the identity aspect of it. And I felt that there was a lot of fear that was propagated, which didn't really resonate with me because I felt like I had experienced God, I knew God, and there was so much love. Like, where does that fear come from?
To be able to experience that love first is key in terms of creating that foundation first. And yeah. then the fear isn't necessarily your first innate reaction anymore. For me, hearing that is, that's how I kind of got, my first memory was I was in Quran school of, and I was in like KG1 and someone was reading Quran and we're like supposed to repeat, I don't know what surah it was exactly. And someone didn't memorize it and he was beaten in front of me.
Oh, wow.
So I thought, okay, these are the words of God. And if I don't know them, I'm going to be, you know, physically hurt if I don't know them. And there was a sense of initial fear of, okay, this is this is how you should be and so on and so forth. So I'm just pointing and emphasizing the point of that love was built first rather than fear. And that changes everything.
But that I think me. Also each journey has its merit.
Definitely.
And, yeah. I think that if I had, and each personality has its own way, and God knows, this is the beauty of it, is that God knows what you need, right?
Yeah.
I suppose because of my personality, I think if I was, I'm a bit stubborn and a bit, I think if I was made to be fearful, I would have been defiant. And God didn't want me to be defiant. My journey was a little bit different because God knows me. I was created by this consciousness. So it knows what I need to come back to it, if that makes sense.
And hearing that in terms of my story is switching that narrative from fear to love is its own beautiful journey of itself. And just learning about that is so freeing. So it's not about being a victim or creating that victim mind state. Every journey is beautiful. And that's coming back to that whole, whatever way, whatever journey God has created for you.
It's perfect for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and I have no regrets of that story. It was now that I hear that story or see that story, it's like this, the teacher felt so fearful for us, you know, that she wanted us to really love God in her own perspective. If that makes sense. So there's a sense of she just was yearning for us to really, you know, in her way, know God and know it by obviously memorizing or whatnot, but it's basically knowing God. So there's a lot of love now and hindsight is always 2020, but it's, yeah, I'm super grateful for the journey.
Yeah.
However it unfolded.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Alhamdulillah.
Yeah. So then fear started coming in and that identity of fear.
Yeah. So this whole notion of fear, as an example, like I had, when you taste Hajj for the first time, then you think, oh my God, it's like a drug. Like I have to do this every few months. So it became, and because I was living in the Middle East and, you know, Mecca's like a few hours away, it became like a habit of wanting to go for Umrah. And I remember one of my colleagues was like, it became a joke, like, oh yeah, Lubna's going for Umrah again. And how many sins does she have that she needs to make?
Different perspectives.
Yeah, like just stop sinning and you won't need to go so often. So, and so, so then one of my colleagues was, you know, she dared to ask the question, like, so why is it that you keep going? Like, you know, with this thought of obviously you must
be, you're
trying
to cleanse your skin.
You're trying to like wipe away whatever. And I said, because I love, I love God. Like, if you had someone that you loved, like, wouldn't you want to go visit them often?
Exactly.
Yeah. And she was just like, oh, I never even thought of that. You know, she's like, everything I do is out of fear. And I was like, it just made me realize the different perspective that because I hadn't been so exposed to or conditioned by, that I thought, oh, wow, that's interesting. Yeah.
So it isn't a chore. It wasn't a chore. It wasn't.
No, it was a romance.
And that's a powerful why. That's a powerful motivation to go and connect.
Yeah.
Like that's more sustainable than fear, than having to do something because society has made you feel that you need to do that.
Yeah, it was a romance. It was a love story. Alhamdulillah. Religion is an integration into your life. It's an embodiment in your life. At the end of the day, I look at it like, what is the result? What is the result? Am I loving? How do I act with human beings? How do I treat my family? How do I treat my friends? How do I treat my community? How do I treat people in my life? How do I treat strangers? How do I treat my enemy? What is the result? That is what is important. If you do something that takes you away from God, you cannot treat people with love because you don't feel the love.
Exactly.
So you need to have the love in you full before you can show the love to others.
Isn't that what connecting to God is? Is feeling the love?
Yeah.
Is, you know, experiencing the love, embodying the love, and sharing that love and radiating it outwards.
Yeah, and knowing it undoubtedly. Yeah. That is the most spectacular way of existing. I suppose I'm very attuned to when it starts to dwindle. And then I look at, okay, so what is it that I'm doing? What is it that I'm thinking that is making it less?
That's what I'd like to dive into now is, you know, the first part of the topic is unwavering, right? Mm. Unwavering faith. And I'd like to focus on unwavering. Obviously, you know, life happens.
Yeah.
You know, we have our ups and downs and things like that. But what is unwavering to you? And how do you stay unwavered?
It's interesting because, again, if I go to Islam, we have a very easy formula. The first thing being shahada. So, ashhadu anna la ilaha illallah. To witness. How do you witness that oneness of God and declare that witnessing? So, the witnessing of God has to be in how you experience the world, right? Because God isn't somewhere out of this universe, somewhere far in a different dimension. God is in everything, including in us, right? Mm-hmm. So if we are able to witness divinity and its attributes in creation, in action, in thought, in word, and we are able to recognize that when we don't witness it, what is the difference? So this thought is limiting me being able to see the beauty in you. This situation is limiting me being able to see the beauty in me, yeah? Or can I shift my perspective to look at it in a different way that opens up the heart and allows for that connection? I think that's the aspect of the unwavering. It's a practice. It's a continuous reflection, contemplation. And it's not to say I'm perfect, because of course I'm not. But at least I feel like there is a flag that gets raised when I'm out of it, if that makes sense. And then I have to look, what has taken me out of it? How do I bring myself back? Yeah, so what are the things that take us out of it? Judgment is a big one. Yeah, mm-hmm. Any acts of separation. But you could say what is the most common in society is judgment. So when we say, oh, you know, I'm better than them, or they don't know, or whatever, yeah, the judgment. Mm. This judgment is something that is an ego thing that keeps us away from God, and it creates this separation. So I try to look at how do I understand the other's perspective? If I was in their shoes, how do they perceive it, if that makes sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like any kind of faith, any kind of spiritual path, any kind of religion, if there's no result that is brings you closer to God, then what's the point, right? So,
but
yeah.
People don't know otherwise sometimes. You know, they are, like how you talked about, you know, knowing and witnessing. You know, people don't know that. That's all they know is to, you know, witness the limitation, you know, witness the suffering and things along those nature. And are you so used to judgment? That's all they know.
That's the journey, right?
That's their journey, yeah.
And it's the perfect orchestration for each of us. Because if you think of, like, I mean, what we're taught about, you know, Arkan al-Islam or Arkan al-Iman, number one is Shahada. It's not just making a statement. It is how do I live that statement?
So, statement of what exactly? Like witnessing?
Of the witnessing of God, right?
Yeah.
So how do I make that my life is the embodiment of that witnessing? That if the number one most important thing that I have to do as a human being on this earth is to witness divine, is to witness God's in everything, then that should be my focus.
Yeah.
Right? That is the number one thing to be a Muslim, shahada.
Yeah. So what is witnessing? What is witnessing God or witnessing divinity?
So the way that I understand it, which I'm sure there's plenty of people who can interpret it in their own way.
But your way.
But the way I understand it is that source energy is a light that is then refracted into all of us as souls. So we're not the totality of God, but we have divine attributes within us as a soul. Okay, so this light that we are, that creation is, that everything is made of light in some way. You could say buried under layers of perceptions and thoughts and thought forms. So to me, kafar is to cover, right?
Yeah, that's its direct translation.
Yeah.
To cover the light.
Yeah. So it's the covering of the light. Mm. So it's not, you don't have to think of, oh, this person is kafir because they don't believe in Islam. No. There are plenty of Muslims that cover the light as well. Mm. So it's to really reflect on what is it that creates the covering of the light? How do we dim the light? How do we hide the light? How do we not see that light? And that's with our limitations of thought. So fear, doubt, judgment, insecurity, delusion. These things are the covering of what is the essence of all of us.
And what is the light? Is light love, peace, joy?
So I feel that in Islam, we have all of the 99 descriptions of Allah,
yeah,
which are the representation of divine attributes. And those are light. They're infinite vibration.
Yeah.
Yeah. That if you left it alone, would be infinite. But because our egos like to interfere and our minds, we think we're very smart, then we start to cover them. So mercy, as an example, is an infinite vibration. But as human beings, are we infinitely merciful? Or do we limit our mercy on ourselves and others because of our fear, because of our doubt, because of our insecurity? Yeah.
Yeah.
If you say, okay, so another as-sami', yeah, the one who hears, is an infinite aspect or vibration. So if as a human being you want to embody the one who hears, but you don't listen to anything anyone says because you feel I know more than them. They don't know what they're talking about. I know everything. Then you limit that, right? So it's just from a practical perspective, you see, okay, how much of this energy am I embodying? And can I allow myself to embody more of it? Or am I restricting myself in embodying that light, if that makes sense?
That's beautiful in terms of seeing that, you know, because there is a sense of separation when you hear, you know, the 99 names of Allah. And to hear that, okay, you can embody some of these attributes and incorporate them in your own life, I feel like would bring more of that light, more of that love into your life and joy and so on and so forth. So it's, I feel like it's the awareness of just, you know, obviously knowledge and learning, but also embodying that.
And practice. Yeah, and we're given the practice, right? So for those divine attributes, that's why we do dhikr, right?
Yeah.
The purpose of dhikr is not just to say the word. The purpose of dhikr is to be the word.
Yeah. Exactly. And create, you know, create it as your norm, your subconscious norm, or your main vibration, or your main go-to, you know, feeling.
Yeah.
You know, so that you can radiate it outwards. That's the essence of unwavering, is practice. How do you practice every day? Because I'm sure sometimes, you know, we talked about witnessing. Sometimes you don't have that, and you said that you don't have that initial reaction to witness. But how do you practice that unwavering sense in your everyday?
So I try to take my lessons from God and from His messengers. So as an example, prayer is not something you do only 5 times a day. It's a way of being. So if you look at, for example, the story of how prayer came about in Islam, at first it was supposed to be 24 hours a day you're in prayer. And then the angels said, well, that's a bit hard for
for humans.
For humans, yeah, right? And it is, because we get distracted.
If we break down prayer, what does prayer mean exactly? The feeling or the thought of prayer?
So to me, it's the intention of connection.
Okay.
It's the calling, the intention, the connection. Yeah.
Isn't that the start of it? And then there's, I would say, for me personally, it's a feeling of connection afterwards, or, and feeling that connection throughout your day as well.
Well, there's no point, as I said earlier, no point in doing anything without result, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you intend to connect and you're knocking on the door and then there's no connection, then maybe you're not knocking on the door correctly.
Yeah, or you need to knock a bit more.
Or you need to knock a bit more, right?
Yeah.
But I feel that prayer is this intention to connect, to be conscious of God.
I feel like that's a muscle, though. I feel like that becomes a muscle of, because that's not the norm. Maybe it is a norm as a baby and as a child, but as you grow older, at least for me personally, it's a muscle I feel like you have to train, you know, in terms of your subconscious mind to remember to connect, to remember to, you know, feel love, to feel, you know, to want to connect, to feel God's love and things like of that nature, if that makes sense. And straying, you know, staying away from judgment, staying away from complaining and all the things that separate you. It's a practice. It's an everyday practice.
It's an everyday practice.
Yeah.
And it's, to be conscious of that and to see, like I mean, I feel I like to be practical.
Yeah.
I want to see results. I'll give us an example of fasting, because fasting, of course, is a very important spiritual practice.
Yeah.
So fasting for me is not necessarily restricted to Ramadan. And also as I got older, and of course, when you get older, you don't have the same youthful body that can withstand things as you did when you were younger. But I also found that I made adjustments to how I fast. Technically, I have very low blood pressure. I pass out, right? So it's not practical for me. Mm. But what's interesting is that the response of the judgment is, oh, you need to have a doctor's note sort of thing. And it's like, well, doctor's note for God or for who exactly do I need?
To see it that way, to see that it's God is merciful. God is loving, God is accepting.
But because I see God as merciful, because the first, Ar-Rahman, Ar-Rahim, that's the first thing.
Merciful,
How can I not be merciful on myself also? Of course, God will be merciful with me so that I'm able to experience this light without 24 hours in my brain thinking, oh my God, I feel so uncomfortable. I'm so ill. I'm so ill. I'm so ill. Does that make sense? And then you get the fear, right?
Yeah.
So it removes the shadow and just keeps it in a particular vibration. And I think this is the difficulty, is that we don't allow ourselves permission to have our relationship with God as a personal relationship.
Doubling down on that, I did the coursework in miracles. And one of the teachings is it's either fear or faith and forgiveness. Those are your two options. And being in fear is being away from God. That's the essence of faith and, you know, and forgiving yourself and knowing that God is forgiving. That's such a powerful, first of all, belief and thought to have. How do you create that belief or those thoughts that God is forgiving, that God is merciful? How do you believe that? How do you switch that narrative?
So I think it's that you look at what is your experience as opposed to what is the conditioning. How do you nurture this experience? How do you nurture this relationship? Any belief that somebody has been formed and then reinforced and then confirmed. How do you reshape that neural pathway of a belief system? It's through experience. So it's by trying something a little bit different, by perceiving things a little bit different, by making small adjustments. So what I find very interesting is a lot of people think change happens, like there's a big leap and then like one night you're just something different.
that's not realistic. As much as that sounds amazing, it's not realistic.
But change happens through many micro decisions. And it's the building up of millions of decisions that you make in your life of how are you going to choose to see things. As an example for me, like, I feel that nature is a very neutral presentation of God. I think one of the Sufi poets, I don't remember which one, I think Hafiz, he says, you know, that the sun shines down regardless. Like, how can you deny love like that?
Yeah, unconditional.
Yeah, unconditional. You know, flowers, they smell sweet for anybody. It doesn't matter who's smelling them. There's so many presentations through nature of this beauty, of this majesty. I'll give you a small example that at home we always have had pets. Because children, when they connect with animals, they see a nature that's very different than human conditioning. It's not that the pets, they don't get fear, they don't have anxiety, they don't have emotions, but they have a way of existing that you start to see in a natural state without all the conditioning of thought of human beings. How do you behave? How do trees behave? And how does the wind behave? And I feel like we can look at this. This is why these signs exist, right?
Like,
our body is so intricately, beautifully designed that it's so profound. But the more that you learn about science, the more that you start to think, how can anyone deny the existence of this power? So you were asking about how does one who lives in fear move to that of love? Yeah. I think it's through looking for it, through seeking it. The first thing is you set the intention of, I want to let go of this fear. And then open yourself up to see the signs around you of the infinite love that's available. In every sort of micro decision that you make, you choose love. So if you're making a decision in your life and you say, okay, I'm afraid, that's why I made this decision, then you know it's not the right decision.
Right decision, yeah.
Right? Like it may be the what you perceive as practical.
Yeah.
But when you tune into the love component, the love really guides you, opens the way, right? Like everything is reorchestrated for you, right? In your vibration in that moment.
That goes back to when you first experienced Hajj, right? Every thought was listened to.
Yeah.
Yeah. And imagine living your life in that vibration, in that experience.
Yes.
As much, as long, or as much as possible throughout your day, or having those moments. Because all you need are those reminders, you know, those synchronicities. And those, I feel, reinforce your faith, you know, and it's more fuel to the fire to strengthening that unwavering aspect.
And you know what's interesting is that people think, oh, I need to have a huge sign, right? Like, if I become like whatever, then I'm going to believe that God's miracles are possible. But the miracles are in everything, like the little butterfly that like comes and flies by you and you realize, oh my gosh, that butterfly is showing me something.
Exactly. I recently read in a self-help book, it was saying, as soon as you ask for a sign, that should be your sign. That should be your sign that you're asking for a sign. Like that intention to want to see a sign is a sign within itself. So hearing that, I was like, oh, wow, that's so powerful, actually, you know?
Yeah. But like when we experience things in our own lives that are really difficult, I don't question why did this happen.
Yeah, at the moment it's,
I know why. It's because God made it happen.
Yeah.
And it's not to punish me. And I see it as punishment perhaps in that moment because I feel it's unfair and I feel I don't deserve that. And I feel like I'm a good person. What did I do to deserve this? That goes through your head. But then how long are you going to sit in that? You need to just brush that aside and say, no, I know God loves me. That's the unwavering thing. That's the guarantee.
That's faith.
Yeah.
It's not knowing. Maybe you know, but generally you're saying you don't know. It's not knowing. And that's faith, right? It's faith or fear. Fear is also not knowing or projecting negative perspective of what could happen that's negative. But faith is believing that there's a bigger perspective or, you know, something that is coming that's good for you. Maybe you don't know why, but it is. That's what faith is.
And I feel also the thing that is coming is not necessarily the tangible thing. The thing that is coming is the witnessing of divine.
Yeah.
The thing that is coming is the elevation of consciousness. It's that internal shift that happens where the light becomes stronger.
Yeah. And then from there, maybe the physical will happen. But
But I feel like the attachment to the physical thing is what holds us back because we feel like unless that physical thing happens, then it hasn't happened. But it happens. And then the byproduct is the physical thing.
Yeah, exactly. That's not what you should be waiting for.
Yeah, no.
No, yeah.
And the physical thing is not the guarantee anyway, because you might not still be alive to witness it.
Exactly, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So, I feel like we have a mental body to reflect and to see how do I look at things differently. And if you have certain guarantees of existence, each one has their own guarantees of existence or beliefs about it. My personal belief is God loves me.
It's a powerful belief.
My personal belief. Yeah.
That's a powerful belief.
Yeah.
That takes care of a lot of other negative beliefs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, my personal belief is God loves me. Because Al-Wadud is infinite. How can he not love me?
Yeah.
Right? Like, just to reflect on that for a second, Al-Wadud is infinite. Right?
What's Al-Wadud? Is it
the loving,
like love? Oh, the loving. Okay.
So if that is infinite love, and it's in the noun, it's in the verb, it's in all attributes of love, right? So if that is infinite, then of course it's God's going to love me.
Yeah.
Who am I? I'm like a little speck on the, in the universe, right? So not very relevant. Why would I think that God's not going to love me and love everything else?
Yeah,
that's my premise. Number one, God loves me. Number two, that God is merciful. I mean, all of these attributes of divine, like they're all infinite attributes. So if God is merciful, then it's infinite mercy. So how can any situation happen where mercy doesn't exist? There has to be mercy. It may not be in this moment. It may be in a future moment, but there is mercy in the event that all of these infinite attributes of God that we're taught about, we have to think, what does it mean? So that, you know, if divine is the omnipotent orchestrator, all-powerful, right? How can we doubt that? We don't need to doubt that.
I feel like your quality of questions is something to, is a big takeaway, is what type of questions are you asking?
In
terms of what does this mean?
Not to look at it from like the little ego of, oh, my car broke down or whatever. I mean, like the silly things that we get. But to look at it like, hello, you are here to witness divine in its infinite properties. Yeah. And that should be the only questions you ask in any situation. How do I witness?
Yeah.
You know, how do I see this divine properties of justice, of power, of strength, of love?
And what if it's a situation that's not loving? How do you see it, you know?
I ask, how do I see the love?
How do you see the love?
How do I be the love? How do I see the love?
Do you feel like you get answers instantly?
No, not always, but eventually there is an answer. Once you set intention, energy moves in that direction.
Yeah.
Right? So the thing is, I think when we suffer, a lot of the time we kind of like the suffering. We're not ready to ask the question that opens the door to
it.
And then that's okay. But everyone has a different threshold for suffering. It's so uncomfortable to be in separation. I don't like it.
If you can feel the beauty and oneness, you know, as you're saying about nature, that unconditional love, why would you want to leave that?
And the thing is I can experience it almost tangibly. So it's not that I'm always in oneness and love. But the moments where I'm in judgment and complaining, it's very uncomfortable for me and everyone around me.
Yeah.
Because I feel like, that energy is really strong. Man, it's not comfortable. I don't want to spend too much time like that.
That's really beautiful. So I think it's time to wrap up. Your final three questions. What are you most grateful for right now?
I'm grateful to be able to live the life I'm living.
And your second question is, what is your current superpower?
My current superpower is knowing that I have a choice to be that light or not. That's the superpower, is that it's like you make a decision about it. You can make a decision. For me, that's the superpower.
And your final question is, what is one piece of advice or one ember of wisdom that the audience can take regarding unwavering faith?
Don't listen to what anybody says. This voice of God is inside you. It's so loud, so clear. We just tune it down. Like, just listen to that. Like, nobody's opinion matters. It's just what's in you. And your intuition is, we have to teach ourselves how to listen to it. But nobody's opinion is important. What is important is your voice inside you.
And where can people reach you?
DiraInternational.com. So Dira, D-I-R-A, international one. So it's all one word, .com.
Thank you, Luby, for being here. I appreciate your time and your presence.
Thank you so much, Haruf.
I really enjoyed it. You're such a source of light and love to my life and my family unit's life. So thank you.
Thank you. I'm so grateful for everything that you are.
May this episode enhance your daily quality of life. May it empower you and enlighten you. Thank you for listening. Have a day filled with peace and light. Stay blessed.